Okay, you're up. Come to order for House Committee on Rules, and it is the second day of, February 2012. All right, so we're going to get started right away, and we're going to have a public hearing and a works, or see, actually a public hearing right now on House Bill 4152. And open a public hearing on that. Madam Secretary of State, you're up first. Thank you.
Is it on? It's on. Okay. May I proceed, Mr. Co-Chair?
Oh.
All right.
Affirmative.
All right. For the record, Kate Brown, currently serving as Oregon's 24th Secretary of State. And to my right is my elections director, Steve Trout. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here to testify on behalf of House Bill 4152. And I wanted to say thank you to Representative Matthews and his staff for taking leadership on this issue this session. House Bill 4152 is similar to legislation I introduced during the 2011 legislative session. The 2011 bill came from a work group, a bipartisan work group, that we put together to tackle the issue of campaign finance reform in the state of Oregon. I think it's really fair to say that we really, really struggled with the issue of campaign finance reform in Oregon, and we really struggled to reach consensus around the issue. However, there was one issue that we all agreed that there was room for improvement, and that was the arena of increasing our transparency in our campaign finance reporting. So Oregon is one of only four states in the nation without any campaign finance limits, and we in Oregon, as you all are well aware, rely on the ORSTAR, our transparent web-based reporting system, to enable the public to know who is contributing to elections. The problem that we noticed in this particular work group is that an increasing number of contributions were being held till the end of the election cycle when Oregonians had their ballots. And, of course, with the U.S. Supreme Court decision in the Citizens United case, and we're seeing super PACs playing a huge role across the United States, I would argue that House Bill 4152 effectively lets Oregonians know and follow the money in politics when it matters most, when they have their ballots in their hands. It requires that during the last 2 weeks before an election, both campaign contributions and expenditures greater than $1,000 be reported within 2 days. In our Secretary of State's office, we would say that this approach focuses on the alligators, not the mosquitoes. And it balances the need for a rigorous reporting structure with the demands on smaller campaigns and volunteer treasurers where many of the unintentional reporting mistakes occur. This approach is also very similar to the federal reporting requirements, which require 2-day reporting of contributions over $1,000 within the last 20 days before the election. So in 2008, the Campaign Disclosure Project, supported by the Pew Charitable Trust, ranked Oregon fourth in the nation for our efforts around campaign finance reporting and its transparency. At that time, we were the most improved state in the nation. I believe it's due to our bipartisan efforts in this body to develop our transparent web-based reporting system. But one criteria we did not meet was the rapid reporting at the end of the election cycle. If we were to pass this legislation, I believe we would lead the nation in transparency in campaign finance reporting. I am happy to answer any questions. My elections director is here to answer any nitty-gritty details, and I know that Representative Matthews, the sponsor of the bill, will be testifying shortly. So, thank you very much for your time, and I really appreciate your consideration.
Committee, questions? Okay, Representative Winger.
I've got you here. So you started out your statement, Secretary, pointing out that we are one of a small number of states that have no contribution limits. In your capacity, you get to watch this up close. Is it your sense that being one of the three or four states that has no limits, that we are one of the three or four most corrupt or most tainted states as a result of these unlimited contributions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wingard, I actually see this all play out during the 2012 election cycle since we've had the U.S. Supreme Court decision in the Citizens United case. But I actually believe that the Oregon system is a very clean system and that we have done a great job with our campaign finance reporting system. For the most part, Oregonians throughout the entire campaign cycle can follow the money in Oregon politics. Do I believe that we can increase the transparency? Yes. And that's why I'm here in support of this bill. In terms of trying to reach a bipartisan consensus around campaign finance reporting, I'll just tell you that who was at the table during our work group. We had Representative Cliff Bentz and Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, to name a couple of the legislators, and Art Towers from SEIU, and Justin Laney from the Oregon Business Association, and Cheryl Perrin, who's actually worked issue of federal campaign finance for a number of years. And we, frankly, really struggled to reach consensus. We concluded our meetings about 2 weeks before the Citizens United case was decided. So I certainly support reasonable campaign finance limits. In Oregon, that would require amending our Constitution. Oregonians rejected that a few years ago, but it's a conversation I think we need to continue to have. It's much longer, I'm sure, than you wanted me to answer, but hey.
That was really good. Anybody else? Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Delighted to be here. Thanks for your time.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Is Mr. Trout leaving too? Because I did not engage because I had technical questions that I didn't want to hit this.
Steve, you want to come
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Berger, Mr. Trout is here to stay with you as long as you.
We
need
see
him.
A lot of Mr. Trout. I didn't want him to sneak out the door. No, okay. We'll hear all. No, you can sit down. I'll wait. Yeah. I just didn't want him to leave the room.
He will not leave the room until you give him explicit permission.
Thank you, Mrs.
Secretary. Don't forget it, Vicki. Representative Matthews, you want to
give me permission? Representative Kemmer, join me as well, sir.
Affirmative. Representative Kemmer. Well, welcome to Rules.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Chair Olson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative, House District 50, which is Gresham. Proud to be here today to talk to you a little bit about an effort in campaign finance reform and testify in favor of House Bill 4152. Just a couple things I'd like to be on the record anyway, as the Secretary of State did a great job in the background in the work session. First, I'd like to say is that we made some past efforts in campaign finance reform, and we couldn't quite get there last session. Coming into February, I did what I asked my wife to do years ago, and that was lower my expectations. So we brought forward a bill that we think is a modest approach and something that's been worked on and something that will assist with the transparency of elections. We contacted agency friends, found out that there's a chance we could increase transparency in campaign finance, and we could also provide some relief to campaign treasurers. House Bill 4152 accomplishes the goals by requiring following changes. As you heard, it's going to first require all expenditures contributions over the $1,000 mark to be reported within 2 calendar days, once it occurs within 14 days before the election. Secondly, it's going to change reporting requirement on all other contributions expenditures from the current 7-day requirement to 14 days once it occurs within 42 days before the election. The reason that's important is, and why the $1,000 limit, it was set after recognizing approximately 80% of all contributions occurring within the last 14 days of the election cycle were greater than the $1,000 mark. they're able to focus on the races that as we call them, targeted, with the large contribution dollars rolling in at the last minute. And the other ones that would be less significant, it allows them the 14-day reporting. This will provide relief for the campaign treasurers. We felt that it would also focus on rapid reporting of large contributions. It warrants a reduced expectation on smaller contributions. And quite honestly, there's a lot of money spent to the question that was asked earlier from the good representative, Wingard. I don't believe Oregon's corrupt at all, but I'm not real proud that we're the second highest per capita in the nation in campaign expenditures. We're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars beating up one another while our citizens are struggling. And quite honestly, I think the money could be better spent in other places. And if we're going to spend this money, and if we're going to raise this money, and people are going to contribute this money, then by all means, transparency is what people deserve. And they have a right to see that and how these races are being influenced in the final stages of the election. So we're in favor of House Bill 4152, and proud to sit here with my good friend, Representative Kenemer, and again, the outstanding work of my legislative assistant, Derek Bradley, who's a great mind and helps out a great deal. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Kenemer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Bill Kenemer, State Representative, District 39. Thank you for the opportunity to be here, and just want to kind of give a second to what Representative Matthews had to say. We've been before you before to talk about concerns that perhaps we need more transparency in campaign finance, and frankly, we had a bill last time to talk about what I consider laundering of money, where we put it into PACs and gets distributed and the source is not known. This is a much more modest bill, but a very practical bill. And I think people are interested in the money that's being spent. And I think there's an opportunity for people to know and see if that makes a difference. And it's pretty simple. It's very modest. It's straightforward. And I urge its approval.
Derek, you want to jump, or are you done?
Thank you, Chair Olson. Real quick, for the record, my name is Derek Bradley. I work for State Representative Greg Matthews, who is the State Representative for District 50, representing the wonderful people of Gresham. I had a lot of conversations about this bill, and there was some discussion about why keeping it at over 1,000 or at 1,000, and could we lower it? And at the end of the day, we wanted to find a way that captured a lot of money that goes into the campaign. This was the range that the work group had come up with was between over 1,000 and over 5,000. We chose the lowest amount of that range because we're pretty passionate about campaign finance reform in our office. And we wanted to get something done that was going to capture the money that's going to be in this election. There are going to be $50,000 checks that come in the last week of this election this year that voters will never see or know about until after they've voted without this bill. And so there are many people that might be interested in a lower amount or a different amount, but we wanted to build on the work group's work and try and get something done in the short session. So thank you for your time.
Okay. Representative Burke.
Can I address some technical issues that I see in here? The $1,000 contribution, I think, is quite useful information. The $1,000 expenditure limit, it seems to me, in two calendar days has some issues, and I'll tell you why, having been involved in campaigns. Towards the end, you suddenly get these bills that land on your desk. And this, you know, sometimes you dispute them. Sometimes you have to check with a staff person, well, what does this mean? And $1,000 ain't much when you're spending that kind of money at the end of a campaign. And it seems to me that you're going to have a lot of amendments on the expenditure side if you make such a low limit and such a short time. And my treasurer happens to be a volunteer whose time I value in an enormous way, and the whole amendment process and calling the Secretary of State and explain invoices that come in wrong that you want to argue over, these whole things bother me a lot on the expenditure side. And the other thing I'd like explained, if you wouldn't mind, is the calendar day. Does that mean that if a bill landed on my desk on Friday and it wasn't reported on Monday, then you'd be in violation? Do you see what I'm getting at?
I do, and I believe maybe the Secretary of State's office might be better to
address that. They may be, but those are the questions that
But Representative and Chair and Committee, your point about expenditures is something we've thought of often, actually, and that exact scenario that you described. And one of the issues that we've kind of come to is I believe Oregonians are more concerned about where the money comes from, not necessarily where it's going.
And so I
can tell you this. As I mentioned before, I have lowered the expectations coming into the session. I want to do something that's palatable to people, that we can vote on, that we can explain, and we can justify, and we can defend. And if that means that the bill that would be before you would be amended to not include the expenditures, but you would still support it as a committee and as a body, then I think we walk away with something that's very meaningful. And if that's where your committee's at, Mr. Chair, we could certainly entertain that. And I would not want to dismiss the wonderful work of the work group and the incredible work they've done at Secretary of State's level. But again, I think walking out of the session at the end of February, if we haven't created jobs and we haven't done anything and we don't get anything meaningful, but I do think given our money situation and how it flows throughout our campaigns, this is a step in the right direction and I believe a modest step.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, may I respond
sure,
as well?
Go ahead.
I concur with Representative Matthews. We discussed this earlier. My wife does mine. And I know it's just impossible, I think, to do it at that crush moment and get it right. And all the corrections create all kinds of complications. I would really encourage you just to strike it. Let's make it simple and pass it.
Representative Esquivel.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The way I read the bill is that you were talking about getting something on Friday. You would have to report that by Sunday with a calendar day, whereas if you went to a business day, it would be Tuesday.
That's correct. And again, that's something the work group, I'm sure, has discussed. They may be able to, Chair Olson and Representative Esquivel, they may be able to answer to that.
And I would also like to say that it's unfortunate when you see CNEs that a lot of money's been spent on these elections, and we all know we spend a lot of money on these elections, and it's unfortunate. I agree with you, Representative Matthews, that it's way too much money. But what's real sad is a lot of it's out of state. We have people that are quite capable within the state of Oregon to handle a lot of these issues, and we're not utilizing our own people. I don't understand that one, but that's just a statement.
Anybody else? Yes, Representative Barnard.
If I may, just a quick comment about the 2 days. I know that I have found myself entering items in Oristar at all times of the day and night.
Yep.
Sundays, Saturdays, other days. I think Oristar, unless the computer fails, Oristar is always open.
Representative Berger.
Yeah, I have to comment on that, good Representative Barnhart. The CPA who volunteers to do my CNEs works Monday through Friday, and I don't ask him to volunteer on the weekends to do my work for me because he's a really honored volunteer, and that would put him in a bind, and I'm not very comfortable with that.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the hearing. Thank you.
I'm going to ask three people to come up in this next panel, and Steve, we'll have you come up then when we're done here. But Fred Yates, if you'd come up. Janice, if you'd come on up, and then also Kevin. And let's see, I think you'd be probably a good one to start with this group.
I always have to go last. Good afternoon. Janice Thompson with Common Cause Oregon. It's a pleasure to see many of you again. I hope you have a very successful legislative session. A very highly regarded element of campaign finance disclosure law is reporting close to the election, particularly the reporting of large contributions. And that way, the goal of this legislation is commendable, but I'm going to suggest another approach, One topic that's already been touched on is to focus on contributions, not expenditures. Definitely for all the, technical reasons that makes the reporting of this on the spending side especially more problematic and more prone to potentially amendments and things like that that Representative Brugger mentioned. And as I believe it was perhaps both Representative Kenmer and Matthews, in terms of, the interest of the public and the press, it's the contribution side. But I really think the focus needs to be on the last 7 days, that this right now, under the system we have now, this is the window during which reporting of contributions is not required before Election Day. So, there have been various statistics discussed, but what seems really important to me is to zero in on the transactions made during this last week. So, I took a look at this in the week before the November 2010 general election. In that week, there was $4.27 million in itemized contributions that came through with those dates in that week. I say itemized, so I did kind of take out like the miscellaneous and stuff like that. Now, if there was two-day reporting just during that last seven-day window of contributions of 5,000 and up, you would have reporting before the election day of 74% of those dollars, and it would be 207 transactions. If you set that threshold at $2,500, you would be asking treasurers to do a total of 319 additional transactions, and you would see the reporting of 83%. If you kind of went down to 2,000, 367 transactions, and you'd see 85%. So my suggestion is, if you want to catch these larger last-minute contributions, to take this approach and to not make the kind of more sweeping timeline changes seen proposed in the legislation before you. There was some reference to grades. I'm very, very familiar with this. There's been a history of some nonprofit groups, grading disclosure laws across the country. They actually, I don't think, have been keeping that up, in part because people were moving to the electronic age and a lot of the disclosure was improving. But as there was a reference, when ORSTAR was adopted, Oregon's grade did go up quite dramatically, but not quite as high as people maybe thought it would, because of there not being a provision in the ORSTAR system for disclosure of large contributions kind of in that last week. So I would argue, like I say, being very familiar with all that, how they were grading everything, that what I've just suggested would definitely get you that higher grade. Being really familiar with it, I would tell you I don't think Oregon's grade would change under the legislation before you, because though some timelines increase, other timelines roll back. To put the federal this system into context, the $1,000 there, I think, is very commendable. This has to be looked at in kind of keeping in mind that the federal level does operate under contribution limits, that being of $2,500. I think, and I've talked to, I was actually just on a conference call right before the winter holidays with state folks all across the country, having a discussion about disclosure improvements, and everybody was very intrigued to hear about Oregon's continuous reporting. And I think it's not typical, and I think it's fair to say that at the federal level, I would give up that $1,000, two-day reporting in exchange for the continuous reporting system that we see in Oregon. That said, a couple other things to put even my recommendation into context in terms of, like, you know, what is the problem we had, you know, that we're talking about. The vote by mail window, I think, it by no means eliminates, but I think it does reduce some of the October surprise, you know, some big, large contribution that comes in and enables something. So I think we do have to keep that in mind. And I think it's, you know, that also, in looking at, you know, the large contributions, when I pulled the data up out of Orestar for that last week, at the end of October, early November in 2010, most of them were not first-time donors. So the two big ones were $1,000 to now Governor Kitzhaber's campaign from the Democratic Governors Association.
$100,000, sorry.
I just didn't read my K right in my little scrawl notes. $100,000. But that wasn't the first time that they had contributed. You know, I think their total contribution was, you know, in the $600,000 range. The other largest contribution in that time window was $100,000 to the Dudley campaign from Stimson Lumber, which had also given before. So, you know, so there's no denying that there are these big contributions coming in. It's not quite clear that the evidence indicates that it's, like, new, and whether or not the public hears, like, oh, you know, the contribution from Stimson Lumber is, you know, $250,000, and now it's three. I mean, it's just like, at some point, they're really, you know, we're talking about big numbers, and, yeah, you know, how much sticker shock, you know, value that comes into, I think, you just need to be aware of that. To the extent that there might be some, like, you know, coming out of the blue first time, it is, my understanding is that in the week after the election, those are reported. I mean, you know, because that last week is kind of like the wind down, the transition from the 7-day to the 30-day. Now, maybe the press are just like, you know, they've stopped looking at Orestar. But I just don't recall a great number of press, you know, stories from the press of, geez, you know, this really big contribution came out of the blue kind of reports after the election. So I just think that that's important context to put even what I'm recommending, or to help evaluate even what I'm recommending, but I think it's particularly important to keep that in mind in taking a look at House Bill 4152 that's before you, which actually really does recommend some pretty significant changes in timelines overall.
Thank you. Kevin?
Thank you, Chair Olson. For the record, my name is Kevin Neely, and I'm the co-owner of C&E Systems, and we process lots and lots and lots of political transactions. I surprised myself by coming in and support of this legislation. I do think this legislation will cause a workload increase for folks that do what I do, but that's in part why I support this legislation. I think by shifting the burden on the smaller, more likely to be volunteer treasurers out there from 7 days to 14 days, that you increase the likelihood that people will be able to handle their own campaign finance work in those smaller races. That, one, it doesn't make sense to come in and pay a firm like mine. They're probably only going to move, you know, somewhere between $5,000 and $15,000 through a committee like that. They're not likely to have that $1,000 transaction, and so giving their volunteer 2 weeks to keep track of the books is pretty helpful. I think, in fact, 100% more helpful than what we have right now in the last 6 weeks of the election. And so for that reason, I think it's a beneficial piece of legislation in doing what I often come here to talk about, giving some of this work back to volunteers. The way that the law is written right now, I think it's almost impossible, even for those smaller campaigns, where often the candidate themselves is trying to do the work and run a campaign at the same time. It will help them in doing what they all want to do, which is adhere to the law. And I think that of those 300 to 400 transactions that Ms. Thompson referenced earlier, I would bet that 95% of those transactions will fall into the hands of my firm or fall into the hands of the people that do what I do in on the other side of the aisle. That's just where those large dollar, I mean, if you're running a campaign that has $1,000 or more transactions, the likelihood that you're using a firm like mine is very high. And so for those reasons, I think this is sound legislation. From a practitioner standpoint, I can tell you that 48-hour reporting is really, 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 really hard to adhere to. I just got done handling a congressional race that you're probably all familiar with, and that race for the last 20 days has 48-hour reporting. It's continuous 48-hour reporting. It's not calendar day reporting. And I can assure you that neither I or my staff have taken a day off for a very long time, and we aren't going to be taking a day off for a very long time, probably until about May 16th. The 7-day reporting is hard. The 48-hour reporting is harder. But we're paid to do this work. I pay my staff to come in on the weekends if they're going to come in on the weekends. I don't pay them as well as I should, but they're not volunteers. We're providing a service, and we accept when we sign a contract with the client those burdens. But 48 hours is challenging reporting, and I think that as you guys contemplate the passage of this legislation, the piece that I do, the one piece of this that is really pretty challenging for me to think about is the expenditure side of the equation. If you were going to carve this down at all, I would suggest the expenditure side is where to carve down. And the reason for that is that really what the public is interested in knowing is who's out there influencing the legislation, who's out there influencing the elected officials. And the answer to that lies on the money coming in the door. I'm fairly certain that all those checks that come to me are not swaying any legislators or any elected officials on how to vote on a bill or what they're going to do when they take office. So it's the money inside. That would mirror the federal system. Federal system is $1,000 or more, and that's an aggregated number. And so I would be perfectly happy in legislation like this to see the expenditures go away, but I think you might want to think about aggregating that $1,000 if you stick with this legislation. And so money that comes in the door, if in the last week a donor gives $500 on day one of the week, and then comes back and gives $500 on day two and $500 on day three, they shouldn't be exempt from the 48-hour reporting. If you're going to do it, you might as well include those folks as soon as they aggregate over whatever amount you decide is the right number. Is $1,000 the right number? As Janice said earlier, the difference between $1,000 and $5,000 is probably a fairly significant number of transactions, but not a draconian number. Again, the real benefit to legislation like this is that for those smaller committees that are never, ever even going to have to worry about that $1,000 transaction, it buys them a little more time and it buys them an opportunity to not pay somebody like me their hard-earned campaign dollars to handle their books. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, and thank you for the time to talk about the bill.
Thanks, Kevin. Do you have a question, Representative Holby?
Can you elaborate a little bit more on that aggregating piece that you spoke of? So if I understand you correctly, you're saying that if somebody 2 months ago gave $500 and then in this time frame then gave another $500, we'd have to report that within 2 days?
I think that's one way of doing it is looking over the entirety of the campaign. Or in Oregon, we've pegged the aggregate system over a calendar year. That's one way of doing it. That's not how the federal system does it. The federal system, the way it works there is you file your final report 20 days before the election, and then the 20 days preceding the election, you go into 48-hour reporting, and the aggregate period only includes those days. I think it's a more sensible approach to have that aggregation period begin if you go to 14-day reporting. 14 days before the election, and if someone gives $500 twice in that 14 days, then they'd be eligible for the 48-hour reporting. Again, I'm not uncomfortable with the calendar year. That's probably a little easier to implement for your friends in the elections division. I don't think it makes quite as much sense. I mean, the point is, people who give $1,000 a week before the election or 2 weeks before the election, and that $1,000, you shouldn't be exempt if you give that $1,000 in two pieces or one piece. So my recommendation is you look only at the last 2 weeks, and you look for people that aggregate over whatever the dollar amount is that you put in legislation like this if the legislation were to pass. Does that make sense?
Mr. Chair?
Thank you. I don't know that I agree with that, but...
Yeah.
Preserver.
Point of clarification, if I read the proposal, it is exceeds 1,000. Mm-hmm. So it would be 500 and 501.
500
before.
And 500 and a penny.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. That there's a huge difference there because
right.
that threshold is a common.
Okay, Fred Yates.
Thank you, Chair Olson, members of the committee. My name is Fred Yates. I'm from Linn County. This bill is very troublesome. It has some dire consequences that I see, and if you look at my written testimony, I have them all spelled out and highlighted and everything else, but I'll just go through them real quick. On page 1, lines 13 through 15, it has this 30-day filing period, which used to be 7 days. So I'm sorry, that's making something longer instead of shorter. Okay. On page 2, line 26 through 45, it establishes this magical $1,000 limit we keep talking about. Within 2 days. Well, in current law, there's no such limit, so why are we suddenly giving all these people a buy? Like Kevin just pointed out, if we got somebody sneaking in here and donating 995, 995, 995, he needs to keep doing this unless you aggregate, and that's not in here. Okay, page 4, lines 14-22, it changes the previous 7-day filing requirement to 14 days. Gee, that's twice as long, not half as long. So we get to hide something a little bit longer. On page 4, lines 41 and 42, gives another 7 days of forgiveness to change the 35-day requirement to 28 days, which sounds like it's going in the right direction, but it's not actually. Okay, all these things are making, the real net effect is all these enable the money trail associated with elections and petitions to be hidden from public view for a longer period of time, not for a lesser period of time. Okay, allows them to obscure who or what entity is actually behind each candidate or petition. We, the people of Oregon, desire elections and petition processes to be open to public scrutiny, not less. And these changes in timelines are making them less open. Okay, we expect the government to play fair in the candidates. Okay, my last point, nobody's even touched on this, and it's really troublesome, is these five representatives who sponsor this bill proclaim it's an emergency necessary for the public peace, health, and safety. Baloney. There's no public peace, health, or safety involved in this bill. What it amounts to is they want to stop the people of Oregon from being able to challenge their bill. And I think that's a terrible usurpation of powers. And I stop at that, and I ask you not to pass this bill out of committee. Kill it dead in its tracks. And I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Anybody? Chair or members? Okay. Yeah, Janice?
Two quick items. One is I would agree with Kevin that if you take this approach to focus on aggregating, I am sympathetic to the 14-day being easier for volunteers. And so Representative Brigger is someone who thinks about this a lot. I would value your thinking on the relative trade-offs between a shifting to the 14-day, but then the trade-off being the 2-day for that last 2 weeks. So I would actually really welcome, I would personally appreciate hearing, you know, your further thinking on that down the line.
Well, I'd have to, Mr. Chair. I'd talk to my treasurer, and I can tell you I would take expenditures out of short timeline. And boy, that calendar day thing, I know it sounds easy, but it isn't for the non-professional. Kevin, no disrespect, but we'd like more non-professionals in here. We'd like more candidates to be able to manage this ourselves. I don't want to hire you, sorry, or your like. I'm thinking about this, Janice, and I'm going to have to talk and think a little noodle, because I get the transparency thing. I absolutely get it, I will be honest, Mr. Chair, because you gave me the chair. And maybe this is to the sponsors, too. When you have a vote-by-mail system, and in the last 7 days, a high percentage of the voters have already cast their ballots, does it really make that much difference that you know that somebody got $10,000 from the governor's PAC or whatever those big numbers are, or if they got $2,000 from, I mean, is that important? And I would also challenge anybody here who is a public citizen who's never used OraStar to walk in there and find that data on their first try, because those of us who know it, we use it, we read it, we get it. But your average public, I'm sorry, it's Mr. Trout, it's not that easy. Here's my statement for the day. And okay. I will noodle on those.
All right, thank you very much. Steve, do you want to come back up if you remember that? Harry, come on up too.
I don't have my pass to get back out of the building, so.
Really?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Steve Trout, State Election Director, brought along Deputy Secretary Pack, who was present at some of the work group that I was not, in case there are any questions regarding that.
Mr. Chair, may I?
Sure. Absolutely.
For the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. A couple of points as I've been listening to the conversation you've been having today. All of the things you've talked about are all the issues the work group talked about at length, and we could talk about them for a long time here as well.
Okay.
The questions are...
We are.
I will try to be brief, Representative Wingard. The questions are, what do you report, at what level, how frequently, and at what level of a burden are you willing to place on volunteers and small campaigns to get what sort of return of transparency? So there's a hydraulics here, right? You push the number up, you have fewer transactions to report, but you're also getting less disclosure. You push the number down, you lengthen the time. All of these things are a good balancing point to have. If you aggregate all the time, that creates a real record-keeping challenge for some people. If you aggregate it just within a limited period of rapid reporting, that makes it easier and perhaps avoids some of the loopholes that folks can fear about. Although I think the likelihood of someone writing 50, you know, $900 checks to avoid having it being reported seems unlikely, but certainly would be possible. I guess I can answer questions as to why our particular work group landed where they did, which is similar to the bill that you have before you, although not exact. But I guess I would just say this: we do think this is an important issue. We do have a chance now with a presidential election coming to improve our disclosure at the end of an election, particularly when ballots are in voters' hands, and they are holding them longer and longer. That we have a chance here to come to some sort of consensus, and I hope that we can continue to work hard in this short session to address this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else? Any questions? Representative Esquivel?
Not really a question, but we really look into our transparency in the state of Oregon, and I think we do a fairly decent job. I was appalled to find out that some states allow the lobbyists out on the floor while they're in session. And I don't report for very, they've got some long time for reporting. I think that it's okay to have transparency. I think it's great. It's very difficult for people to, and I'd like the Secretary of State, if you could make that a little simpler for some of these people, to figure out what in the heck you're doing. Because it's very difficult. The biggest complaint I've had is it's difficult to access. And that's the people I have do it, that's second nature to them. but the public. They say it's very, very difficult to wade through that. So that's just a tidbit of information.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'm going to close a public hearing on House Bill 4152. I'm going to open up a public hearing and work session on HCR 204. So, Representative Nathanson, thank you for hanging in there. And James Harris, if you'd come on up too. Yes, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, HCR 204 commemorates the achievements of the University of Oregon football team. There is a dash one amendment in your packets that seeks to include recognition of the players' academic and public service as well as their athletic achievements. The University of Oregon football team enjoyed an outstanding season. It concluded with a victory in the 2012 Rose Bowl. In addition to their demonstrated athleticism and team ethic, the players also distinguished themselves academically and by achieving 100% participation in a variety of public service projects.
Thank you. Representative Nathanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Nancy Nathanson, State Representative from House District 13. The committee administrator has done a good job of summarizing the purpose of the bill. I will take just a moment of your time to tell you that I, of course, am very proud of the team's athletic achievement, extremely proud, and I brought my little duck with me. It's on my chair. There's language in the amendment that I want to draw your attention to, and I hope you will consider the proposed amendment as well. It's added to acknowledge the team's academic achievement and community service. These aspects of the athlete's university experience are very important. They're important to the individual team members. They're important to the team as a whole. They're important to their peers on the university campus, and they are important to the young people for whom they are role models, and they meet many, many young people in the community. I am very proud of all of their achievements, athletic, academic, and community service, and hope that you will consider the bill and the proposed amendment. Thank you.
Okay. James.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is James Harris, and I'm an assistant athletic director at the University of Oregon, and I'm here to represent both Coach Kelly and our university football team, as I am the person who's probably with them the most. I also want to recognize our representatives from Eugene and Springfield, Representative Bayer, Barnhart, and Holvey, as we touch your areas the most. And thank you for the things that you do for the people of your areas, because just sitting through what you guys just sat through, can't say that I could do that.
That was an easy one.
I will say that we went to three consecutive BCS games. And it's a big time games with big time money, as you're well aware. We won the Rose Bowl for the first time since 1917. But all that pales in comparison to what we get to do on an everyday basis, and that's nurture and develop young men. And in a game like football, being able to nurture and develop young men, we in turn get to take those young men out into the community and help to impact the community that which you guys represent. So it's an honor to sit here in front of you. It's an honor to represent the young men that go out on that field. We had a gentleman who was our 84th academic All-American. We had four academic honors within our conference, and we had 14 other people recognized for what they've done in the classroom. So, yes, football is something that we see on the field, but it's also something that we cherish in the classroom as well as the community. Every single one of our football athletes has participated in community service, and the person who has done the most community service within our athletic department was Michael Clay, who was a starting linebacker who had an outstanding game in the Rose Bowl. So as we like to say, we are both champions on the field and in the community, and we thank you guys for honoring us with this proposal.
Very good. Questions? Representative Barnhart, you don't have a question on this one?
I have a comment.
Okay, Representative Berger.
I do have, Mr. Harris, I come from a family that's been known to bleed in orange and black, but I can tell you New Year's Day, all of Oregon was proud of what you achieved, and I was rooting for you hard, sort of shouting down my ancestors. But I do have a specific question on the amendment, which Representative Nathanson calls out specific team members for specific honors by name. And I guess I want to make sure that this is a football team, and there were a lot of players who aren't in this resolution who contributed.
Yes.
And so is there any angst over the fact that, and I'm not diminishing the achievements of those called out, I just am a little bothered by the ones whose names are not called out in this, so I'd just like to bring that forward.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Berger, I do acknowledge that. I don't think there will be much angst. Football is a team sport. We would like to be recognized as a team, but academics is an individual sport, if you will, and we want to we want to recognize those individuals for their effort in the classroom and, in turn, inspire others to do the same.
So thank you for that answer. That helps me.
Mr. Chair, may I add one comment to that?
Absolutely.
Thank you. I too, understand Representative Berger's comment and would like to point out that I was very pleased when I started asking about the academic and community service achievements of the team when I heard, well, they all participated in community service. I said, you mean 100% of the team? I asked for clarification. You mean literally everybody, not just, you know, some of the famous guys or whatever. They said, yes, literally every member of the team participated. So that's why it's very clearly pointed out in, I guess it's on page 2 of the amendment. Every member of the football team. So I was very pleased to make that finding and to have it included.
Thank you. Thank you.
Anyone else? Yeah, Representative Barnard.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to note and congratulate the University of Oregon Athletic Department. I think this is a great opportunity for us to acknowledge the successes of the University of Oregon football team, but many of the things that we're saying in this amendment to the resolution also applies to other sports. The athletic department has done a very commendable job over the last at least decade, perhaps a little longer than that, in working to have their athletes present themselves not only as athletes, but also as students and academics and as members of the community. And I think you've very very well illustrated that in the additions that you've put in this resolution. I have to acknowledge that the kind of energy level and the kind of work that it takes to be a member of a varsity athletic team is tremendous. Not only do you have to study and do the work that every other student has to do, and according to this, do it better than most students, but you also have to be available for practice and for a whole variety of other things that I, frankly, as a non-athlete, can only imagine, and do them all well. And the fact is that the athletic department at the University of Oregon, while we've had our famous missteps, has also done a tremendous job of dealing with that issue. Your graduation rates in team sports have been going up over the years. The trend line is up, for which I think is wonderful. Most athletes never go on to professional sports. They're never going to earn a living as a professional athlete, and so they have to get the education that they're there at the university for, and the University of Oregon has done a great job in promoting that. The University of Oregon Athletic Department has done a great job in promoting that. You also have a great cheering section among other students, and I think some of the naysayers notwithstanding, the fact that we have a successful football team also means that other students and alumni, such as myself, and other boosters of the university feel increased pride in our school and see the academic program that's better, in part because we have a successful athletic program. I think all these things fit together very well in helping a university succeed. And I have to say, I am particularly interested in the care with which the athletic department has approached these off-the-field issues, because I think they are absolutely critical to the mission of a fine public university. You've got to do the student side of the student-athlete piece well. And when you're dealing with these young athletes, you have to also do the community service piece really well, because it's in our contributions to the community that we make an awful lot of our contributions to our civilization and our society. And I want to commend you for that. And I really appreciate Representative Nathanson getting this material into this resolution. Thank you.
Representative Beyer.
Thank you. And thank you for being here today representing the university and the team and the coach. And I do want to give you my most grateful thanks for the hours of enjoyment you've given our community and especially my family and the years of memories. So,
Representative Holvey.
all these ducks have to talk, don't they?
Yeah. Got to walk the walk. I wanted to say, Mr. Chair, I've been a duck football fan since the days of Mel Renfro, which is almost 1960, I think, as a child watching football at Hayward Field. And, there's one really troubling part of this bill that's been bothering me is trying to figure out who is going to carry it. Being that I represent the University of Oregon's campus mostly, but in the future, Representative Barnhart's going to represent that campus now. And Representative Nathanson represents Autzen Stadium area and actually has worked at the U of O campus. And Representative Beyer is a huge fan as well. And, but seeing how Representative Nathanson's put a large degree of work into this, I
think Wingard should do it.
I would vote against that.
We could always have James do a coin flip here right now.
Has your tails with five people. Anyway, I just want to thank the U of O and I'm really proud of the accomplishments over the years. Even in the down times, it's been a great enjoyment for people around the state to come and watch the football team. And in fact, the University of Oregon and their athletic department included is a huge economic driver for our whole region, for the whole state, really. And I appreciate all the work you do for your students as well. So.
All right. Representative Wingard, all right, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, members, we're in work session as well right now. See, Cheyenne, you just received some information.
I did, Mr. Chair, and members, if you noticed from your packets, there was missing the fiscal and the revenue statements on the -1 amendments. We had it on the introductory measure, but they've both been delivered. You've got a copy, each of you, of the no fiscal. And the revenue statement is actually in my hand and was just brought in and handed to the vice chair that indicates no revenue impact if anyone would like to see that. So you are free to move the measure if you wish to.
Okay. Yes, Representative.
Chair, is a motion in order?
There is. And
I would like to move the -1 amendment.
Okay. Representative Barnhart moves the -1 amendments into HCR 204. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection?
Well, I would simply add one note to the conversation that's already taken place. I attended my first game at Hayward Field in the early 1950s.
Mr. Chair, may I ask a question?
No, we're going to.
Did they actually have pads and helmets in those days?
Actually, they did.
Okay. All right, let's move on. Is there any objection to adopting it? There is seen none, so adopted.
I don't believe that.
And Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House concurrent resolution 204 as amended to the floor with a due pass. I do adopt the recommendation.
Okay. Representative Barnhart moves HCR 204 as adopted to the House floor. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And I think Representative Nathanson, you're going to carry it and maybe have some backup here.
It's a team effort.
Okay. We're going to close a public hearing and work session on HCR 204 and open a public hearing and work session on HCR 203.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, HCR 203 recognizes Deputy Kelly Fredenberg for his service to the state of Oregon. If I've done the math correctly, he was 33 when he was killed in the line of duty. He served Oregon as a law enforcement and public safety officer for 8 years. He was in his patrol car responding to a dispatch when another vehicle crossed the center line and collided with his.
Okay, Sheriff Jason Myers, and then also Mr. Gary Fredenberg. Okay, and you got Sheriff Bob Wolf here coming up too. Okay. Absolutely. Okay, Sheriff Myers.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. I'm Jason Myers, Marion County Sheriff. First, I'd like to begin by thanking all of you for taking time to hear our request for a law enforcement memorial on Highway 99E to be dedicated to Deputy Kelly Fredenberg, who died in the line of duty on June 16, 2007. Kelly was an outstanding member of our Sheriff's Office. He was career-minded, diligent in his work, and dedicated to making the citizens and visitors of Marion County feel safer about our community. Kelly started his career in law enforcement with the Polk County Sheriff's Office in March of 1998. He was hired by our office in July 2006 and quickly became known throughout our office and community. Kelly had many friends in public safety, and it's often said that he was definitely a great team player. Kelly was also a dedicated family man and a father. He touched so many lives before losing his life doing what he felt was a calling and service. Kelly lost his life while responding to help another officer who was being assaulted. He died being a hero, even though he would have never claimed to be one. Both the Marion County and Polk County Sheriff's Offices and Kelly's family would be honored to have part of Highway 99E at milepost 36 dedicated to the memory and service of an outstanding and very much missed member of this profession. We'd like to extend our sincere appreciation to Representative Andy Olson and his staff for help bringing this request forward for consideration. Thank you.
Sheriff Wolf.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Deputy Kelly Fredenberg was first hired
if you'd identify yourself.
Oh,
sir.
Sheriff Bob Wolf, Polk County. Deputy Kelly Fredenberg was first hired by the Polk County Sheriff's Office, and he and I quickly became good friends. It's not too often that you get to be good friends with one of your line folks, but one of the things that was so unique about Kelly is that he cared about a whole lot of people and really did things for the community that, you know, a lot of other officers just don't see the same interest. I can tell you from a personal side that Kelly had come in and talked to me quite a few times before he decided to accept the position with Marion County Sheriff's Office, and I kind of felt now that we trained him up to be pretty good, then he was probably capable of working for Marion County. But the thing that still haunts me today is the fact that I had told him, I said, you know, you're going to be a good officer no matter where you go. And the difference is that Marion County is going to offer you a few more opportunities that the Polk County Sheriff's Office cannot, because Marion County is a much larger agency. And I could see in this young man's eyes that he wanted to grow and develop further. And so the thing that haunts me today is that I helped encourage him go to Marion County, and had he stayed at Polk County, maybe we wouldn't be all sitting here today. But he is he's definitely missed by Polk County and members of the Marion County Sheriff's Office, and he's well-deserving of such a tribute, and the people of Oregon have lost a good, dedicated law enforcement officer. Thank you.
Thanks, Sheriff. Mr. Fredenberg.
Thank you, Representative Olson and chair members. I'm Gary Fredenberg. I was Kelly's dad. Kelly loved law enforcement ever since he was a little kid. He said he was going to be a police officer. And I remember when he went to the academy, Mr. Wolf handed me his badge when he had graduated and said, here, pin this on him. Hmm. That's a proud moment of my life and a very proud moment of Kelly's. This sign would be a real honor in Kelly's name for what he has done, what he's achieved, what he's done for the community. Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, we are sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
That's tough. Members, too, Gary was down when we put our first memorial sign up on I-5 northbound in the Ankeny Hill Road for Maria Mignano and then also for Jason Haroff from Albany Police Department last year. Now, you were all involved because we passed House Bill, if you remember, 3039, that opened the door for this. So I do greatly appreciate all of you doing that for this. And it's neat to be able to go north on the freeway and to see that sign there. And you'll feel that same just kind of a pride and thankfulness at the same time when that gets erected there on 99. So, hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Well, any questions? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair, can I make a quick
absolutely
statement to the gentleman here and the family that you know we go from one of happiest days and sort of exciting days in Oregon's history to one of the saddest. I stood outside the Capitol and watched the memorial parade for this officer and felt it was very moving and very important that we remember this officer and all the folks who are out there keeping us safe every day and appreciate them. So thank you for their service, your service, and this opportunity. So with that, Mr. Chair, I move House Concurrent Resolution 203 to the floor with a do adopt recommendation.
Representative Berger moves HCR 203 to the House floor with a do adopt recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any objection to that? Seeing none, so ordered. And anyone interested in carrying that? I guess I will carry it. All right. All right, we're going to close a work session on HCR 203 and public hearing. And then we are going to have a work session on LC 305. If you'd explain a little bit.
Mr. Chair, members, LC 305 was distributed to everyone and is also at the dais. It's a proposed memorial resolution to former Representative Alan Penn out of Clackamas County.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chair, as is usual, I'm not going to make my usual statement on this one. I move that LC 305 dated 1/2/2012, boy, there's a lot of twos and ones and zeros in there, be introduced as a committee bill.
Okay. Representative Berger moves that LC 305 dated 2/1/2012 be introduced as a committee bill. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Okay, and any further? So we do have another, but just to give you a heads up, we do have another memorial resolution, I think, that's coming, and that's in regards to Senator...
Representative Jeanette Hamby. Right. Jeanette Hamby is being prepared, coming, right, and worked on.
Just give you a heads up. Okay, we are adjourned.